Doug Tweeding, excuse me, what's that for?
It's a cushion for sitting on.
Where? For where?
Huh? It's for prayer.
Oh. Okay. It's a deep for the bottom.
It's the same.
Where is Gopal's cushion?
All their help. Gopal's cushion is just next to me. When Gopal comes, Gopal's cushion is there. Gopal's sleeping right now, huh?
He's taking some rest. Very good. You think he's taking rest, but actually he's not. He's up to his lila. All we're going to do in the next finish chapter 28, and the obvious chapter to move to now is chapter 31. You may wonder why it's so obvious. Do you wonder why? Huh?
I am wondering.
Okay. Soon you will understand. Because 28 plus 13 is
41. That explains everything.
Is 13 a lucky number in Chinese?
Yeah, somehow it's a lucky number.
See? Okay. Now, 13 and 20. 28 is what? 41. Yes. And 41 chapter, obviously, it's a very sad chapter in one sense. For what is sad for one person may be the cause of another person's happiness. Unfortunately, that is the way reality is constructed. In the spiritual world, in the material world, this is really true. Even Jivo, Jivas, or Jivanam. That one living entity is a food for another. So one person's meal is another person's death. That's the material world. But in the spiritual world, even though there is unhappiness, especially when that unhappiness is separation from Krishna, that unhappiness is the greatest ecstasy. Because, in fact, in spiritual life, there is no difference between meeting and separation, in a sense, in the sense that they are both cause one's association with Krishna. And in the spiritual world, all that counts, all that is relevant, all that is meaningful, is to be with Krishna. Associate with Krishna, because the difference between the material world and the spiritual world in essence is that in the material world no one is attracted to Krishna, but in the spiritual world everyone is attracted to Krishna only. So when Krishna left Vrindavan, he was taken out from Vrindavan by occur. And occur means
cruel.
Occur means cruel, even though it literally means not cruel. But occur means cruel. It means not cruel. When Krishna left Vrindavan, taken by Akura, the Buddha Gopis said, this is terrible. It was like their life had left their bodies. And they said, how amazing it is that the person who has done this most cruel thing, his name means not cruel. So this begins, because yesterday we were speaking about Akura Ghat. Yes? Now it's becoming clear. Akura was an Akura Ghat. And Akura, in Akura Ghat, he saw he had brought Krishna and Balaram from Nandagam to Mathura. Now, they left early in the morning, just after sunrise, and they arrived in Mathura, we'll hear that soon, quite late in the day. Now, how many kilometers is it approximately from Nandagam to Mathura, if you were going direct? Huh? So one could ask the question, because from Vrindavan, it's only how many kilometers to Mathura? Maybe 6, 12 or something like that. I can't remember now. 6, what do you think?
10, 12.
So that certainly, even if you were walking, it would take maybe 4 hours. Why did the chariot take so long? First of all, the exact route that they left Nandagam is known, but exactly how they went from there on is not known. But we know that they arrived by the Akura Ghat. And why did it take so long? And the reason is because the Vrindavan Vasis, as Krishna was driving, they all came out and they wanted to see Krishna, and Krishna stopped and said something sweet and nice to them. Because, again, this is the specific nature of the residents of Vrindavan, is that they're attracted to Krishna. And why were they attracted to Krishna? Because it's completely natural for a soul who is by nature part of Krishna to be attracted to him. Now, we understand that Krishna is the absolute truth. That means the sum total of all in existence and all in non-existence. This is Krishna. So, according to how one approaches that absolute truth, it's called Adhaya Jnana in Sanskrit, or the Paramasatyam. According to the methodology that we approach the Absolute Truth with, we understand him in different ways. We'll get different viewpoints of him. It's not hard to understand that one Absolute Truth, but one can realize him differently according to one's consciousness. And consciousness is determined by the methodology that you approach him. It's not hard to understand. For example, there is the king in his private quarters. There is the king when he's sitting on the throne. And there is the king when he's in his form of ruling or government. There is a notice put up on the board. The king has decreed that everyone must. There was actually one king in Bengal who made the decree that everyone must chant 64 rounds a day.
Wow.
You know that? Yeah. Huh? I can't remember his name.
What happened to him?
What happened to him, or what happened to the citizens who keep moving their beads without telling him, without changing around? Because he can't chant because of a decree like that. They were revolting. You know that word revolting?
Yeah.
It just means disgusting. And it also means up in arms. So there's an old joke that when the minister of the king runs to the king and says, oh king, the peasants are revolting. And the king said, I always knew that. He meant in one way and another way. In other words, he was arrogant. Anyway, it's a good book, but a little bit funny. So in any case, the people, the ordinary people, they never go to the court of the king, nor do they get to the private quarters of the king. Their only relationship with the king is that they know they have to do what he says, that he's the government. So, and that government pervades the entire kingdom. The order of the Lord, the power of the king, pervades the entire kingdom. It is resting, the law and order of the kingdom is resting on his power. So if one has the consciousness of an ordinary citizen, and in this case that means of a meditator, a jnani, who is detached, has no real relationship with the Supreme Lord, he uses the process of jnana, and he approaches the Lord. Thus, not wanting, like the citizens, they obey the law because they don't want to get in trouble. So the jnani, he engages in his activities because he does his meditation because he doesn't want to get entangled in karma. So it's all negative. I don't want to do any activity. I'm just going to meditate. With my intelligence, I'm going to discriminate between what I am and what I am not. And I won't engage in any activities, material activities. So I don't engage in any activities. So he perceives, his consciousness causes him to perceive just that the Lord's power is everywhere, like the citizen who perceives that. And then the yogi who is controlling his life airs and fixed in meditation, he can actually perceive the Lord within his heart, in his forearm form, and he's meditating on that. His mind is focused on that. So his mind is fully controlled, and it's not trying to avoid everything. There's something positive there. He's meditating on the wonderful form of the Lord in his heart. He's not doing any service. He has no love. He has no full relationship with him, but he's meditating. So that yogi has a different kind of consciousness than the jnani. But yogi, with that consciousness, he perceives the Lord as Paramatma. Same Lord, but according to the consciousness, he perceives differently. Just like the king is seen by the people who enter his darbar. What does darbar mean? Court, yeah. Like when the king holds his, and he sits on a big throne, and everyone looks at him, and the guards are around him. Yeah, like that. Yeah? He sits on the throne. So everyone is there is somewhat afraid. They're seeing how powerful he is. If you were sitting in front of a king like that and your mobile phone went off, you'd be terrified because it would disturb things, because everyone's attention has to be on the king only there. So that's like the yogi, attention focused on the Supreme Lord. And that consciousness of wanting to focus on the Supreme Lord is so wonderful. But it is not the Supreme. And then there are the devotees who have a loving, serving relationship with the Lord. Those are like the members of the people who are allowed to go into the private quarters of the king, because of their loving relationship with him, they can see things that no one else can see, because their love for him makes them trust, makes them completely trustworthy, because nothing makes one more trustworthy than love. So that is like the people who, again, who go into the private quarters of the king. They're like the guards, even the intimate private quarters. The queens themselves, the king's children, the king's and queens, their mother and father, they have a different relationship than anyone else. They can tease, they can't, when in public, in the dobar, they can't, the wife can't, the queen can't work with the king. She's very, very official. She has to be covered in jewels, so that everyone knows that when she's in the dobar. She has to have jewels and necklaces and gold, so everyone has to see her opulence, so that they know she's the king and queen, and that she has to be respectful. And I've seen in Amir, there's a fort near Jaipur where the king's palace is there, a small palace actually, but it's up on a hill, and they have a cart that the queen used to be carried in, because she had so many jewels, so much golden jewels on, she couldn't walk. So they have a cart that she used to be carried in. Because this is the queen. One has to be in that mood. So when she's in the palace, she doesn't wear all those jewels, because she has a different mood, and in that mood she can joke with the king. So those who are most qualified, those who approach the Lord with the deepest bhakti, those with the most intimate relationship with him, they are in the private quarters, and that's the devotees. They approach through bhakti, through devotion. And devotion is actually that thing that opens our eyes more than anything else. So there's two kinds of devotion. One is called vidhi-bhakti or vaidhi-bhakti, and the other is called rahanuga-bhakti. So in vaidhi-bhakti, one does devotional activities because the scriptures, the shastra, says you should do that. You should get up in the morning, you should chant your japa, you should worship the deity, you should offer him incense, a ghee lamp, you should offer him flowers and some food and some scent, some oils. So the motivation that just pushes someone to worship the Lord is that they're doing it because they're told they have to do it by shastra. And that type of worship brings on to Vaikuntha, the spiritual world. It is so wonderful. And then the kind of worship that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught is called Rāgaruga Bhakti, which means following in the footsteps of the Rākatmika devotees, the devotees who have already developed their full loving devotional mood to Krishna. So for those people, what motivates them is simply their love for Krishna. They don't have to be told anything. Mother Yasoda doesn't have to be told, no, you must cook for Krishna. Because her love for Krishna is so great, that's all she's doing all day long. She's thinking about cooking, she's churning butter, she's getting the cows ready, she's doing this, she's doing that. Everything just for Krishna. So it's all spontaneous and natural for the residents of Vrindavan, and their bhakti is called Rākatmika bhakti. Their very soul is full of, their very self is full of rag, of attachment to Krishna. And then the devotees who follow in their footsteps, not imitate, but follow in their mood, are called Rāganuga bhaktis. Bhaktis, that they're following in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, in the way that they serve Krishna. So then the question comes, well, there's the devotees who follow Vidhi Bhakti the way they're people, and they're doing things just by the way they're told. And there's the devotees who are spontaneously attracted to Krishna and don't have a care or a desire in the material world. So I want to go to follow the path of Mahaprabhu, which goes to Vrindavan. So I want to follow that kind of bhakti, but I'm not on that level. So then, what to do? So Jiva Goswami has described what to do in Bhakti Siddhava, and also this is the basic teachings of Srimad Bhaktivinoda Thakur, although Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada. They say exactly what to do. To make the heart right is that you should know where your goal is, but you should use the support of Vidhi Bhakti to support the path that you are following, of the path of Ragmarg. Marg means path. That is what the conclusion of Srila Jiva Goswami and Srila Bhakti Vinod Thakur, Srila Bhakti Sanatana Saraswati Thakur. So, although it's usually not spoken about in that way, that's how Srila Prabhupada taught us, that we follow the rules and regulations that will change our heart and purify our heart and make our consciousness proper so that we can actually see Krishna. Manjana Chanti Bhakti Valochanina Santas Daiva Radeshu Valokayati Yam Shyama Sundarama Chintya Gunasarupa Govindam Hare Purusham Tam Hamdazani. That when one's consciousness is full of love, and then one actually has the vision and is able to see Krishna, because one doesn't see with one's eyes. One sees with one's consciousness. Just like if you see some food, but you're just eating a big feast, you've just completed a big feast, and then someone gives you some wonderful food, you see it with a completely different eye. You see it completely differently than when you're hungry, very, very, very hungry, and haven't eaten all day long. This is hundreds of examples of this. But we don't see with our eyes, we see with our consciousness. So when we want to see Krishna, we have to make our consciousness right to see Krishna. Correct. And what is the correct consciousness to see Krishna with? It is bhakti, devotion. So the whole attempt of a devotee is to develop Krishna consciousness. And what's Krishna consciousness mean? It means serving, devotional service. This is the process. We perform devotional service, we turn towards Krishna. Because just like if I turn my, I won't do it right now, but if I turn my back on him right now and then start saying, I can't see Sri Radha Raman is not there, and neither is Hema Krishna Kapoor, Pratika, etc. But my back is turned. So that's our situation in the material world, and bhakti is the process of turning back towards Krishna. So when you're facing away from someone, when your back is turned on those people, on the person, and you're facing away from them, and you're involved in activities on this side, not seeing them, you have no consciousness to see them, you don't think about them. So Krishna consciousness means the gradual process, or bhakti means gradual process of turning to Krishna. And by the process of having our consciousness focused on him, not only because we're supposed to, ultimately, but because of the attraction to Krishna. And again, this is the what was motivates the residents of Vrindavan in their activities is that they're attracted to Krishna. Why? Because they have love for him. And why? Because he's the natural resting place for attractiveness, for our consciousness. The consciousness is not naturally attracted to impersonal. Who is attracted to something impersonal? Can you imagine even your mind without any form or content? One would say it will be a lot more peaceful than what usually goes on. But that's impersonalism. This is where it's only because of our life, the life towards Krishna is a very painful life. Material life means a painful life because it's our back towards Krishna. So here, Akura has taken Krishna away from Vrindavan. And he has visited Vrindavan. He's a relative of Krishna in the Yadu dynasty. And he has placed Krishna upon a blue chariot. And he's gone as a messenger of whom? Kamsa. Kamsa Vesta, and it's quite amazing in one sense that he's a devotee of Krishna, he's a Krishna's relative. But Kamsa is sent to bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura, and he's even told him why, what he's going to do. He's so arrogant, Kamsa. He even tells Akura what he's going to do. He's planning on having them killed. And Akura, amazingly enough, goes to bring Krishna and Balaram back, because Akura, his mood is, you are thinking that they are going to be killed, but I know who is going to be killed. Because all the members of the Yadu dynasty, they're not very favorable to Kamsa, because Kamsa is so cruel and wicked, and he's overthrown Ugrasena. And he's cruel. He's a demon, an asura. So, when Kura has given Krishna and Balaram on a new chariot, and Akura has sent, Kamsa has sent a new chariot, and Akura was so happy about that, because he was thinking, oh, it would be terrible. Because for the Lord to use something that's already been used, the prasadam of Kamsa, that would be terrible. So, from a Akura's point of view, the fact that Kamsa sent a new chariot was wonderful, it was appropriate. But from Kamsa's point of view, he was thinking, I'll send a new chariot, because after all, they're like teenagers. And teenagers, you know, you give them a new car, and they want to, he thought that would be very attractive to get them a new car, he was thinking, because he was a hoon at heart, he was thinking they could be attracted to hooning, perhaps, maybe not, but he was given a new chariot, because thinking the village boys, and when the village boys see something like this, oh, they're going to be so, they're going to be so happy, and they won't be able to resist big, new, fancy chariots, and then Akura will easily take them to the Torah. And there, in the Torah, I have my plans to have them killed. This is the demonic mentality. The demonic mentality, there's the ignorant mentality that's turning our back on Krishna, and I'm forgetting about him. And then there's the demonic mentality of being against Ishwara, the Supreme Lord, the Paramishwara, against Krishna. That is demonic. for Kamsa was demonic. And he perceived Krishna as a threat to his life. And this is another aspect of demonic nature, as they see Krishna as a threat. And opposed to seeing Krishna as a threat, the proper way for a soul to see the Supreme All-Powerful Lord is that he's my master. Let me surrender to him and place myself under his protection. But instead, the demonic see him as a threat. So Akura drove Krishna to from Nandagram to Mathura, and they stopped in Akuragat, which is just at the border of Vrindavan and Mathura. And because it was noontime at that time, and it was time for Akura to say his prayers, noon prayers, and to bathe. So they stopped, and he placed, for Krishna and Balaram's protection, he placed them under a tree so it wouldn't be too hot, and he went to take bath in the Jamuna. And there he saw Krishna and Balaram. He had left them on the chariot, and he saw Krishna and Balaram in the form of Vishnu and Anantashesha. And he was amazed, because he was a devotee of, he knew that Krishna and Balaram were the Lord, but he knew that they were the Lord, he thought that that was the supreme form, because his consciousness was like Vedi Bhakti more, but something more, because he got the chance to see Krishna and Balaram. But it was a Vaikuntha type of consciousness. So when he saw the Lord, when he went into the water to say his own prayers, he saw the Lord, and he came out again, and he was so amazed, because he thought he left Krishna and Balaram on the chariot. So he went back to the chariot, and he saw that Krishna and Balaram were there, so he went back to the water, because you can't be in two places at the same time. And he saw Krishna and Balaram in the water in the same form. So he began to offer very prayers, very wonderful prayers, and it is said that Akura reached perfection by offering these prayers. But we won't read those prayers right now. But after he offered his prayers, he came out of the water. That vision he had disappeared, and he came out of the water. And he went back to the chariot, and he saw Krishna and Balaram there again. And he had an amazed look on his face, because he had just seen the Supreme Lord in Anantashesha in the water. And he knew that they were the same as Krishna and Balaram. So when he came back, he had such an amazed look on his face. And Krishna, very innocently, I'll read it now. While Akura was offering his prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the Lord disappeared from the water exactly as an expert dramatic actor changes his dress and assumes his original feature. After the Vishnumurtis disappeared, Akura got out of the water, and finishing the rest of his ritualistic performance, he went to the chariot of Krishna Balaram and was struck with wonder. And he had a look on his face. He was so amazed, because he saw Krishna Balaram, who were the Supreme Lord, sitting on the chariot. So Krishna asked whether he had seen something wonderful in the water or in space that would explain the look that he had. And Akura replied, "My dear Lord, all wonderful things that are happening within this world, even in the sky or in the water or on the land, are factually appearing in your universal form. So when I have seen you, what wonderful things have I not seen?" In other words, since the wonder that he had just seen in the water of Vishnu and Anantashesha had come from Krishna, and as he was seeing Krishna, he's saying that now upon seeing you, dear Lord, have seen the source of all wonderful things, the most wonderful thing, the most wonderful person. So that was his conclusion, that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. Prabhupada continues, this statement confirms the Vedic version that one who knows Krishna knows everything, and that one who has seen Krishna has seen everything, regardless of how wonderful a thing may be. Nothing is more wonderful than seeing or knowing Krishna. So we tend to become attracted by the things of this world. But if we become attracted by Krishna, those things of this world will cease to attract us, because they are only aspects, small, insignificant aspects of Krishna. So this is the burning question a devotee has always. How can I become more attracted to Krishna? How can I become more attracted to Krishna? How can I become more attracted to Krishna? And what's the answer? Hearing and chanting and following all the rules and regulations, the vidhis, will support our development of attraction to Krishna. Raga, one meaning of raga, is dying, but not the kind of dying like, but when the washerman dyes the cloth, that is called raga. It becomes immersed in color. So we want to color our consciousness with attraction to Krishna. We don't want to have it attracted to this world. What is the problem if our consciousness is attracted to this world? It's illusion. It's turning our back on reality. We can't actually turn our back. We can't be away from reality, because reality means it's unavoidable. But we can't forget reality. So Maya's job, Maya's service, is to help us forget reality. But Maya's real service, like the service of the prison, the head of the prison, is to bring us to Krishna, to rectify us, to make us at least good citizens, and maybe bring us even closer into the private quarters of Krishna. Because Maya is an extension of the internal energy, Lakshmi Devi or Srimati Radharani. So this statement confirms the Vedic version that one who knows Krishna knows everything, and one who has seen Krishna has seen everything, regardless of how wonderful a thing may be. My dear Lord, a prayer continued, there cannot be anything more wonderful than your transcendental form, to merge into the impersonal, to forget one's existence, own existence, remove suffering. But it is not more wonderful than the eternal form of Krishna. To go to the heavenly planets is wonderful, but it is not more wonderful than the eternal form of Krishna. To get so many mystic powers, to be able to control the material nature, that's what the materialists want ultimately. To not rely on the ordinary means to control material nature. You need power to control the material nature. So the grossest type of power is physical power. I would control it by by my strength, I will lift this table, and I can control things that way. And then a little more subtle than that is by controlling people, and controlling, and the way to control in this world is by having as much money as you possibly can. So with money, that's how people try to control in this world. And more subtle than that, because after all, people are interested in money when they have so much more than they need. So much more than they need, they're still so interested in money because they have, because it's so addicting, because it's a desire to control and have power. Which is just what the conditioned soul wants. Conditioned soul specifically wants power so he can control, wants to use Lakshmi for himself, for his own pleasure. But Lakshmi doesn't like to be used for anyone's pleasure except for Narayan. So if we try to grab Lakshmi, we become like who?
Ravana.
Yes! Ravana. And Ravana can't get real Sita Devi. Is today, tomorrow is the appearance day of Sita Devi. Yeah? So he can't touch real Sita Devi, but he can only get Maya instead. So instead of getting Lakshmi Devi, we end up with Maya, grabbing Maya. And when we try to grab Maya, we end up with Kali. You've seen pictures of Kali?
Oh, yes.
She's happy. What does she look like in the pictures you've seen?
Well, a lot of skulls
and a lot of, yeah. And she's laughing madly, and her friends are drinking blood of all the demons that she's killing. And she's got many hands, and she's chopping off heads, and she's got her foot on the head of one, and chopping in blood. This is what you end up with when you try to grab Lakshmi Devi and exploit for your pleasure. And she punishes. She punishes who? The demons. And we think, why should she punish me? I'm such a nice person. But the truth is that everyone in this material world is not a nice person. Everyone in this material world is talking about a person, and it's basically a asura, a demon. You can have the external of a nice person, but we all have little buttons on us. And if someone pushes one of those buttons, then the real nature comes out, and we bite. Well, Kura says, there cannot be anything more wonderful than your transcendental form. When they have seen your transcendental form, what is there left to see? After saying this, Kura immediately started driving the chariot, and by the end of the day, they reached the precincts of Mathura. As they rode from Vrindavan to Mathura, all the passers-by along the way who saw Krishna and Balaram could not help but look at them again and again. Why? They could not help it, because he's so attractive. What does he look like? So attractive. He's everything that attracts. In the meantime, the other inhabitants of Vrindavan, headed by Nanda and Upananda, had already reached Mathura by going through the forests. And they were awaiting the arrival of Krishna and Balaram in the garden. They were outside the city, waiting for Krishna and Balaram. They had got there before them. And what do you think their mood was? Where is Krishna and Balaram? We have not seen them for so many hours. Where is Krishna? Where is Krishna? Maybe something terrible has happened. What happened to Krishna? Where is Krishna? Because the residents of Vrindavan, they only think about Krishna. Maharaj would send the cowherd boys, go out on the road and see if you can see the chariot coming. Come back and tell me. Climb some trees just to see when Krishna is coming. This is a good mood, isn't it? When is Krishna coming? Where is Krishna when he's coming? So upon reaching the entrance to Mathura, the Kura was there, and they were on the chariot, and then all the residents of Vrindavan were so happy because Krishna and Balaram had come. So upon reaching the entrance to Mathura, Krishna and Balaram got down from the chariot and shook hands with the Kura. So Kura had been with Krishna and Balaram and so happy. And the residents of Vrindavan who had been left behind him, Nandagan was so unhappy. And before the residents, Nanda Maharaj and Upananda, all those who came from Vrindavan, they were unhappy. And Krishna came, and then they were happy. And then Akura was so happy because he was with Krishna and Balaram. And they got down from the chariot, and they shook his hand.
Huh?
It was his turn coming up. And Krishna said to him, you may go home now, because we shall enter Mathura later, along with our associates. And Akura said, no worries, right? She'll be right. And got on the chariot and rode off. Is that what happened or not?
No,
he didn't say that. He said, my dear Lord, I cannot go to Mathura alone, leaving you aside. I'm your surrendered servant. Please do not, he was begging Krishna, don't send me away. Please do not try to avoid me. Please, please. Now he was a good Hindu. What do you think he said? Please come along with me with your elder brother and cowherd boys. And sanctify my house. Come to my house. Of course, you must hear that. The culture.
And what is Krishna saying? Yes, yes, yes.
He said, Tarabhane. And he did come. A little later. My dear Lord, if you come, my home will be sanctified by the dust of your lotus feet. The water emanating from the perspiration of your lotus feet, namely the Ganges, purifies everyone. Including the forefathers, the fire god, and all other demigods. Bali Maharaj has become famous by simply by washing your lotus feet, and he enjoyed all material opulences. Later on, he was elevated to the highest position of liberation. The Ganga water not only sanctifies the three worlds, but is carried on the head of Lord Shiva. The ancestors of Bhagiratha, sanctified by this water, achieved the heavenly planets. Also, so he wanted Krishna to come and he would wash his feet and sanctify his house and his relatives. And Krishna plays a trick on him. But that happens later in chapter 49, a little later. O Supreme Lord of Lords, O Master of the Universe, one can achieve piety simply by hearing about your transcendental past. O Supreme Narayan, you are praised by selected voices, verses, so off my respectful obeisances unto you. And Krishna said, on hearing this, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna replied, Akura, I shall surely come to your home with my elder brother Balaram. And he did, but only after killing all the demons who were envious of the Yadu dynasty. In this way, I shall please all of my relatives, because Akura was his relative, also a member of the Yadu dynasty. So he said right there, basically, I will come to your house after I kill Kamsa. Akura, became a little disappointed by the words of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And he could not disregard the order. Because Krishna now was, he wanted to do something. He had other things he wanted to do. Akura therefore entered Mathura and informed Kamsa about the arrival of Krishna. And then he entered his own home. So we'll end here. The wonderful activities of Krishna continue. Akura went home. Thank you. Any questions or comments?
Guru Maharaj mentioned Deva Goswami gives some resolution to this dilemma of an aspiration for Ramanuja by any capacity.
Yeah.
So, does that mean that the human body that's in support, the body one does will be focused and specific to that goal?
As one advances, certainly. But that's the basic process that we're given. There's nothing outside of that. Because you hear, you chant, you start at the beginning of the Bhagavad Gita, you start in the Bhagavad Gita. So at that time, you may not be so focused. And then you read the first chapter, and the second chapter, and the third chapter. But then, after more hearing, more chanting, more maturation, then your consciousness becomes more focused, and you read Chaitanya Charitamrita. Chaitanya Charitamrita is quite direct about Braja. But there are also some devotees who seem to be more attracted to Madhurayan. And that type of worship and things like that. And even Mahaprabhu's leader, there were devotees who were attracted to Ramachandra. But we shouldn't rush or push things. It should be quite natural. We shouldn't want to impose, because there's a tendency to think, oh, this is the best. So I should immediately be doing the best, because after all, I'm the best. I deserve everything. So we should be somewhat patient. And that's Krishna makes the arrangements.
You mentioned that how people want to control, and the gross form is with their own strength, a little more subtle is with money, and then you want the continuous and more subtle money in the finish.
Mystic powers. Yeah, more subtle mystic powers. Of course, there's many shades in between of ways to control mystic powers. And in between mystic powers and money comes computers. How to get everything you want and do everything you want. Have your own virtual universe. And you play these games, killing everyone, gaining your weapons. And then if you die, you just come back to life again and try again. Control and enjoy. We grew up without those things. How what?
How boring.
Yeah.
You could only consider you were or not you.
No. We imagined we were not who we were. You do that. Do your children play those kind of games?
No,
I was talking to Hema.
The
computer games, yeah, video games.
My son especially loves those.
Yeah, it's a virtual illusion. What do we look at the virtual? It means something like as if, what was it? Didn't we look that up?
Something like almost.
Almost imaginary or something. And in that I'm a great hero in the video game, the computer game. I'm a great hero, and I'm conquering everything, and I'm a great race car driver. But actually, it's all going on in my mind. That's just Yeah, it's not very glorious. Yes.
Akula, you mentioned that he was very happy when he took Krishna Balaram to Kamsa. So he knew that he was Supreme Personality of Godhead even before he saw the his form in the water. Or he knew already.
And he knew he was going to see Krishna. This actually is spoken about earlier in the 48th chapter when he's coming. And when he sees the footprints of Krishna in the dust of Vrindavan, he rolls around in the dust. He knows Krishna's position as the Supreme Lord.
So he knows that he's going to kill Kamsa.
Because he knows,
Prabhu, you also mentioned that about analytical studies, that jnana is, you mentioned something about jnana, and I remember reading in the Bhagavad Gita about, I'm not sure whether in chapter 2 about this, Krishna says that analytical studies and bhakti, you can achieve the same thing or something.
Yeah, which is better in chapter 12?
Chapter 12.
In the beginning of 12, it says. And also, chapter 2.
Chapter 2, I remember there was one comment.
Chapter
40. I didn't really understand because bhakti should be higher, but how come that sloka says that?
The goal of both is the same ultimately.
Yeah. So how can it be the goal be the same when
because it's the yoga ladder. So just like the jnana would be the second step of the ladder.
Yes.
And bhakti may be the higher step. So one may jump right to the bhakti step and keep going to Krishna, but one also may take one step at a time and take a more gradual approach. So karma leads to jnana, leads to yoga, leads to bhakti. If one takes a step-by-step approach. But if one stops on one step, it's like if you're in the second grade and you've learned 1 and 1 is 2 and 3 and 4 is 7 and 2 minus 1 is 1 and you think you're happy on that step and you think that's everything, then you can stay on that step. But you don't get to learn the higher principles.
So that sloka doesn't really say that you can actually go to that the spiritual world?
You can, with jnana. If you have some bhakti, you can only go to the government part of the spiritual world, the impersonal part, through jnana, because you'll have that consciousness.
Impersonal.
Jnana leads you to the impersonal. Because that's your consciousness. You're trying to escape from the material world. You don't want to engage in anything material, but you don't have any attraction to Krishna. You're just seeing the power of Krishna. Just like the citizens just see the power of the king. His law is enforced everywhere. Is that clear? Because it's true that Krishna's energy is everywhere. There's nothing in existence other than Krishna's energy. That's the absolute truth. There's nothing outside of him. But that same energy, if you have different vision, different consciousness, can be seen as Krishna's energy. And a reflection of the spiritual world too. Well, you see Krishna working in it. If you have a different consciousness.
And then you won't see the things that everybody else is seeing?
You'll see them, but you'll see them more deeply. Just like when
that when karma tests a preparation of food, it tastes differently than you taste and I taste. He can tell you exactly every ingredient in it by tasting.
And Hema.
And Hema Prabhu was also like that. So one's vision, one's consciousness, what one cultivates in one's life affects one's consciousness, and that affects how one perceives reality more subtly, more grossly, in more detail. So when one has love for Krishna, one perceives Krishna working in everything. Stavaram jagamam deki deki tare moti savachahaya niza ishtadeva sporti. One sees whether the thing is moving or not moving. One sees one's ishtadeva, one's principal lord. If that's the vision of a uttama.
I remember Sir Prabhupada mentioned in one of the purport that he said that this world you see as illusion is not illusion, and it's a bit confusing to me because you know that it's illusion, but in one sense also I haven't really gone to that. I mean, you need transcendental to really see the illusion. But I brought up saying that it's not illusion. Truth is illusion, but it's not illusion, so it's confusing.
If you look at it, if you look at Lakshmi Devi, or the energy of Krishna, and to enjoy it, then you're looking with illusion. But if you look at Lakshmi Devi as Krishna's Lakshmi Devi, and that same illusory energy becomes real, because you're seeing things properly. Maybe, I don't think I made it clear. But if you see, If I go to your, look at your car, and I see this is my car, and I can see it as mine, it's illusory. But the same car, if seen in a different way, is your car, is accurate. So the same thing is illusory or non-illusory depends upon the consciousness of the person who's seeing it. So when we see the material world as Krishna's energy, and it should be used in his service, then that same material world is not seen as Maya. It's seen as Krishna's energy, as Krishna's. So there's no Maya there. The Prabhupada looked at the material world in a completely different way. He could look at anything and see how it could be used in Krishna's service, so there was no Maya there. And if I look at it, I'll think of how to enjoy it. So there's the influence of its illusion, because I can't enjoy. Is it clear or not clear? Keep asking.
Yes, that I understand, but to be able to see it in like from my daily life, that's sort of, I don't really
have that vision.
Yeah, that's
So we're still a little bit in Maya. Maybe our vision is covered by illusion, that we tend to think, oh, this is mine. And what is ours? Even, you've seen it in your own life. Even this body that we think is ours is not under our control. It does what it wants to do. It's under the control of time. So what's ours? What's mine? What's meant for my enjoyment? What's mine? So that's illusion. When we see it, this body is, my body is meant for serving Krishna. And then that's proper vision. So what to do if I don't see perfectly properly? I sort of have the idea. So there's ways to purify our consciousness. That's what we do. We try to purify our consciousness to get our vision correctly. First, just like a child, when the child looks at fire, and she thinks, the baby thinks that fire is such a nice color as it touches. So the parents give the child intelligence how to see the fire properly. That the fire, maybe it's pretty, but it's dangerous, pretty dangerous. Don't touch it. The child is given intelligence by the parents. So similarly, Shastri gives us intelligence by which we can see the material world more accurately. Closer to what it is, as opposed to with the illusory vision that it's meant for my enjoyment.
So, for example, when I say I am, one says I'm already in the illusion, isn't it?
We talk about conventionally in a day-to-day way, but we have to talk like that. Because we say, my body is going to work today. It sounds funny. People will look at you. Very strange. My soul who is within my body and mind is going to get into the car. And I'm actually not driving anything, but my body is driving everything by the influence of the subtle body. So it's not practical to talk in that way. But the consciousness that we have shouldn't be as the enjoyer. And the first part of it is thinking of ourselves as a servant of Guru, Vaishnava, Krishna, Prabhupada. So that's the first thing. Why am I going? We have to get that straight in our consciousness. Why am I doing this? Why am I doing that? What's my service in doing it? How to do it in such a way that Krishna is pleased? So that's a real remaking of our self-concept of who I am and what I'm doing. But it's not easy to do these things. So we try to use everything in Krishna's service, let's say, looking at it. Because we're Krishna's servant, and everything that Krishna has put under my influence, I will give back to you.
We try to use everything in Krishna's service, but then how would we come to know that Krishna has selected us for that service?
Arjuna is, well, Prabhupada explains that in the 18th chapter. What's that? Bhagavad Gita 57. That is, if you think something is your duty, you get it confirmed by the devotees. And that way we know, and then we take it seriously. Okay, a man's duty is as a householder. So he acts as a householder in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. If he starts thinking, maybe I should be a sannyasi, maybe I should be a anupasta, maybe I should be a sannyasi, that's a flickering consciousness. Listen, know what his duty is, and then do it in such a way that Krishna will be pleased. And that comes naturally when there's love, and forced when it's externally imposed, oh, I'm supposed to think like this, but that's the vaidhi support in the natural. Bhaktin Gun. I got confused between Bhat and At. Almost the same. Sayat Bhaktin Gun. You're coming from the... Where are you coming from now?
From the house.
You came all the way here.
Yes. So yeah, that's... actually, I work in the evening. I thought I'd just come for some, you know, listen to some Krishna Katha. I asked my mother to work, her mother to work this morning.
Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you,
Krishna.
Thank you for the knowledge.
No. It's my pleasure. Thank you.